Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelzang, and this is episode number 277. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living Inside Science series, our guest today is Lord Martin Rees. Lord Martin Rees is the Astronomer Royal to the British monarchy and provides scientific and astronomical perspective, research, and guidance to the Queen and others throughout the world. Today on the Not Old Better Show, cosmologist and astrophysicist Lord Martin Rees, who again holds the position of Astronomer Royal, will argue that we must think rationally, globally, collectively, and optimistically about the long-term future of humanity from a science perspective.
Spaceship Earth is hurtling through the void. Its passengers are anxious and fractious. Their life support system is vulnerable to disruption and breakdowns. But there's too little planning, too little horizon scanning, too little awareness of long-term risks. But it would be shameful if we bequeathed to future generations a depleted and hazardous world. So now is the time for an optimistic vision of life's destiny in this world and perhaps far beyond.
That, of course, is our guest today, Lord Martin Rees, author of the new book On the Future, Prospects for Humanity. And Lord Martin Rees will be presenting at the Smithsonian Associates Program Thursday, October 25th, 2018 at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Please join me in welcoming via internet phone to the Not Old Better Show, Lord Martin Rees. Well, Lord Martin Rees, the Astronomer Royal, it is absolutely a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on.
I really am looking forward to talking to you. I love these inside science programs. Of course, you'll be at the Smithsonian Associates coming up on Thursday, October 25th. We're going to welcome you. I think you're going to be traveling. It's going to be a great presentation that evening at 6:45 at the Ripley Center. But tell us briefly about your upcoming Smithsonian presentation, Looking to the Future.
Well, it's linked to a book I have coming out this month, which is called rather pretentiously On the Future. And this book really discusses what we can expect in 2050 and beyond. And of course, I start off by saying I'm an astronomer, not an astrologer. So my crystal ball is very cloudy. And I'm almost as bad a forecaster as an economist, not quite as bad as economist, but nearly. But what I do say in the book is that some things we can predict about changing population and climate, etc., but technology we can't predict. So the different chunks of my book, some of which I make confident predictions and some of which is much more speculative. And then at the end, I venture into the really far future.
Well, I'm taken with this title, The Astronomer Royal Looks to the Future, particularly The Astronomer Royal. Many of my audience might be unfamiliar with such a title, and it's got this prestigious history. And I understand that you advise the Queen and others on astronomical and scientific matters. And so your perspective is that humanity's future is bound to the future of science. What do you mean by that, knowing what a big responsibility you have to give us this kind of advice?
Well, I think it's clear if we look at the world today that we couldn't have 7.5 billion people who are fed at all and living any kind of credible lives had it not been for technical advances. So we have depended on the technological advances made in the last century. That's the good news. But of course, the bad news is that there's a big gap between the way the world actually is and the way it could be. To take one example, there's 1 billion people in the world living in abject poverty, and the wealth of the 1,000 richest people in the world could make a big difference to that, and it isn't. So ethically, we haven't benefited very much in recent centuries, although technologically, of course, we've benefited hugely.
And you've written a new book titled On the Future, and we've mentioned that really in our kind of introduction of you. You're very optimistic about humanity's future. And so what must we do from humanity's perspective to scientifically assure a long-term future for ourselves?
Yes, I should say I'm optimistic about the technical potential of a bright future, but I'm worried about the political dangers. All kinds of things can go wrong. And as we've seen, we don't necessarily fulfill our potential. And I feel we'll have a bumpy ride through this century because of political problems and disruptions of various kinds. But I do feel that we can be optimistic if we handle the problems well. And one which has been in the news quite recently is the question of climate change. And here, this is an issue which has to be tackled globally, because all countries are producing carbon dioxide by burning fossil fuels. And it's clear that collectively we have to cut down on that emission and avoid the temperature rising to a level where you get unpredictably different weather patterns across the world. I think that the way to do this, the win-win situation, is to accelerate research and development into all kinds of clean energy, solar, wind, new kinds of nuclear, etc., and into the other things we need for a clean energy system, better batteries, electricity grids spanning the entire continent, etc. That's win-win, because the countries, including the United States, which develop these technologies, will, of course, get a big market. And countries like India, where now they get their energy, in many cases, just by burning wood or dung on smoky stoves in their homes, they need a grid. And if renewables have become cheaper, they will build coal-fired power stations. Bad for them, bad for the rest of the world. So what we want to do is to accelerate research and development so that the costs come down for clean energy, becomes more efficient, so that the Indians, for instance, can leapfrog directly to that sort of energy system and not build smoky coal-fired power stations.
We are with Lord Martin Rees. Martin Rees is the Astronomer Royal and will be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates program coming up Thursday, October 25th at 6:45. It's going to be a great evening. We've been talking a little bit about your new book on the future prospects for humanity, and you give some examples of some of the advances, and maybe we could specifically mention some of those in biotech and cyber technology, robotics, and artificial intelligence that may offer humanity the kind of the realization of your optimism about the prospects for us.
Yes, well, bio, of course, is already important for improving our health, dealing with diseases. New developments like the CRISPR gene editing technique allows us to actually eliminate certain kinds of diseases if they're caused by a single gene. And in the long run, it offers the opportunity to perhaps redesign the human genome in a more drastic way. That's good news, but of course it raises all kinds of ethical problems as to whether we should do this. Do we want designer babies, as it were? So that's one development which has obvious benefits, but opens up new challenges. And of course, the cyber world and information technology, that's been hugely beneficial. But again, of course, it opens up a new set of risks, cyber attacks, which are getting more and more serious. And artificial intelligence, which is a way in which machines can use their extreme speed of operation to learn very fast, so that a computer can learn to beat a world chess champion within a day by just being given the rules and playing against itself about a million times. It can learn so quickly. And machines like that are going to play an important role in doing many jobs and in controlling traffic flows and electricity grids, etc. Of course, one thing people worry about is whether the labor market is going to be disrupted in a negative way by all these developments. And this is going to be a big challenge for politics and economics, because the jobs that will be taken over are not just factory jobs, not just so-called blue-collar jobs. Indeed, gardening and plumbing will be among the hardest jobs to automate. It'll take over routine legal work, medical diagnostics, and even surgery. And this is going to obviously require redeployment of the labor market. And I personally think what we have to do is to ensure that the owners of the robots and the companies that own them are heavily taxed. And that taxation is used to establish far more jobs of a kind where the human element is crucial. Caring for old people is an obvious one. In my country, the UK, there are far too few people who who are available for that kind of role, and they're very poorly paid and poorly esteemed. We need to redeploy people's work so that more are doing those very worthwhile but now underappreciated roles, and the money earned by the robots can be used to do that. But it'll be a challenge to cope with the robots and ensure that they don't put lots of people out of work and fail to provide adequate, indeed more dignified work to replace it.
There's good reason for optimism. Certainly, as you say, not without its challenges. There will be many obstacles in this and difficulties. It's a complex issue. One of the things that I read about you that I found to be very heartening and I thought very positive, Martin Reason, that is at the heart of your optimism is that we should really care for our home planet. And I'd like to just ask you, are you optimistic about humanity's ability to do that? And if you are, well, how are we doing it well at this point, and how are we doing it not so well at this point?
Well, I think we're not doing it very well because we're not dealing with the risk of climate change, which is not a short-term risk, but it's something which could be very serious in the lifetime of our grandchildren by the end of the century. And also, we need to be concerned about what we are doing to natural parts of the world. Are we reducing biodiversity? Are we causing more extinctions? In fact, the great American ecologist E.O. Wilson said that if our actions lead to mass extinctions, it's a sin that future generations will least forgive us for. So we've got to tread less heavily on the planet. Our footprint is getting larger because there are more of us, and we're all more demanding of energy and resources. And I think we do have to adjust the way we live. In particular, I think we have to use less energy than prosperous Americans now do, and probably also eat less beef. And incidentally, an important new technology will be artificial meat to allow a varied diet for everyone. So we've got to be careful if we want to avoid extending our demands on the planet above a sustainable level. And we should do this because we ought to leave a good heritage for future generations. I mean, I'm from Europe, where we, of course, depend hugely on the heritage left to us by future generations and centuries, from the wonderful cathedrals of medieval times to all the infrastructure left to us in the 19th century, the railways and all that. And it would be shameful if we, in this century, with far more technical capabilities than our forebears had, leave a worse legacy for future generations. So I think we need to have a sort of ethical crusade in this context. And the reason it's difficult is that politicians, of course, tend to focus on the local and the parochial. A famous European politician said, "We know what we ought to be doing, but we don't know how to get re-elected when we've done it." And that's true of the things we need to do to control the global ecology and to produce clean energy, because if we take actions to reduce the threat of climate change, we're doing something now which is going to have a benefit for people 50 years from now and people in remote parts of the world. And that's a hard sell for politicians. And that's why we've got to really hope that a public movement builds up to support these sorts of aims. Because if I look at what's happened in the United States over my lifetime, there have been huge social changes, black power, gay rights, and things like that. And they've all started with a few charismatic individuals who built up a huge following. And politicians then have to pay attention to it because they care about what's in the press, what's in their inboxes. And I think we need similar mass movements in order to generate adequate concern and adequate political prioritizing of these concerns about the future of the planet.
These mass movements, as you suggest, are critical and essential, and your voice is an important one in all this. Lord Martin Rees has joined us today, the Astronomer Royal, and the presentation is The Astronomer Royal Looks to the Future. It's been a pleasure talking to you. You're a very busy man and very much in demand. We're talking, of course, today on a busy day, certainly in terms of space news. I really don't want to let you go until I get a chance to maybe have you comment on the spacecraft crash that took place earlier today. There was a rocket failure, and it forced an emergency landing of U.S. and Russian astronauts, cosmonaut. And I wonder if you'd describe for us a little bit about what's going on and certainly what your perspective is. Thank you.
The news today is that a Russian Soyuz rocket, which was taking two astronauts to the space station, had a malfunction, and the second stage didn't separate properly, and the two astronauts had to fall back to Earth. Fortunately, they were both unhurt. And I think we should say that this was the first such accident in more than 30 launches, because we've all depended on this Russian Soyuz rocket to send astronauts to the space station and back. So the record of this rocket is good, and this is the first accident. But it does make us think about manned space flight and the things it involves. Of course, another anniversary coming up is the 50th anniversary of Neil Armstrong's One Small Step on the Moon. In fact, it's a film called First Man this month, which is a wonderful portrayal of him and his character. But this makes us wonder, what is the future of manned spaceflight? Because, of course, the high point was, of course, the Apollo landings, but they're nearly 50 years ago. You've got to be middle-aged to remember when men walked on the moon. And I remember at that time, I thought it would only be 10 years before there were footprints on Mars. But, of course, it was superpower rivalry that drove the huge expenditure that led to the Apollo program, and there was no reason to continue that. And that's why all the people who've gone into space ever since have gone into just low Earth orbits. And that was true of those who were launched yesterday. And we have to ask, really, is there going to be a revival of exploration to the moon and beyond, maybe to Mars? The fact is that because robots are getting better, the practical case for sending people into space is getting weaker. So in that sense, robots can do all the things which needed people. They can do the geology of Mars by going around on it, and they can explore the outer solar system in a way human beings never could. But I think nonetheless that I hope that some people will go back to the moon and to Mars, but I think they will go as explorers and accepting the very great dangers. And of course, NASA had two catastrophic failures of the shuttle in 130 launches, and each of those was a trauma in the US because it had been presented as something fairly safe. So my view is that if I was in America, I wouldn't support NASA's manned program. I think it would be far better to leave that to private companies like Elon Musk's SpaceX, Jeff Bezos's Blue Origins, because they can afford to cut costs, do things more cheaply and innovatively, and they can send the kind of people who are prepared to accept a higher risk than your nation can impose on publicly funded civilians. And I think it's going to be those bold pioneers like the late Steve Fossett, or the man who fell supersonically from a high altitude balloon, people like that. They will go launched by SpaceX or Blue Origin to the moon and maybe to Mars. So the first people to go to Mars will be adventurers like that. And Elon Musk himself has said that he would like to die on Mars, but not on impact. He's now 47, so 40 years from now, that's not a crazy ambition. And it's a pretty inspiring way to end your life, to go to Mars. And so I think that by the end of a century, there will be a little community on Mars. But as I say, it won't be ordinary people. It'll be these adventurers. I think it's a dangerous delusion to think that we can have mass emigration to Mars to escape the world's problems. And here I disagree with Elon Musk and with my late colleague Stephen Hawking. I think that we have to solve the Earth's problems here on Earth. Mm-hmm. There's no planet B for ordinary risk-averse people. Mm-hmm. And dealing with climate change is difficult, but it's a doddle compared to terraforming Mars to make it as comfortable even as the North or South Pole or the top of Everest. But the people who go to Mars may be important in the long run, because they will be the people who will have the biggest incentive to use these genetic techniques I mentioned earlier, because they are ill-adapted to living out there. They may want to adapt their progeny, and they may want to use electronic add-ons or implants, or even download themselves, if that ever becomes possible, into electronic form. So a so-called post-human era, if it ever comes, will be started, I think, by these pioneers on Mars, whereas we here on Earth, where we are already well adapted, will continue with slower changes.
Lord Martin Rees has joined us today, author of the new book On the Future, Prospects for Humanity. We'll be at the Smithsonian Associates Program Thursday, October 25th. What a fascinating subject this is, Lord Martin Rees. I could talk to you for a long time. You certainly have captured my attention, but thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much indeed for speaking with me.
Remember, Lord Martin Rees, author of the new book On the Future, Prospects for Humanity, will be appearing at the Smithsonian Associates Program for a special Inside Science presentation October 25th, 2018 at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C. Lord Martin Rees's new book, On the Future, Prospects for Humanity, will be available for purchase and signing following the presentation. Thanks to Lord Martin Rees for joining me today, and thanks to the wonderful Smithsonian team for all they do to support the show, The Not Old Better Show. Talk about better. Thanks, everybody.